Hello and welcome to In Conversation with Ashwin, and you are listening to your host Ashwin, who will give you a window into stories and insights into the most innovative and interesting people I know. They've written books, created movements, built thriving businesses, and have insanely interesting ideas. For more, check out our past episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or any other platform you're listening on. Just search for In Conversation with Ashwin and hit enter and follow. Hello listeners, welcome to episode number 12 of In Conversation with Ashwin. And I had an in-person conversation with photographer and entrepreneur Amrita Samant for this episode. In fact, she invited me over to her studio, which looked so swanky and so nice. For the first time, in fact, I visited a guest for a show. Usually they're over at my place or we do this over Skype. But this was interesting. So a little about Amrita, right? She's an HR professional for 7 years. She was, in fact, she's now turned a photographer, runs Mommy Shots by Amrita, which is your one-stop shop for anything baby and camera related. She's been an entrepreneur for 4.5 years now. Although Amrita Samant liked her job in the HR department, there was a constant desire in her to do something artistic with her life. During this phase in her life, she started with photography as an interest and quickly capitalized on her newly discovered ambition. She parted ways with her career in HR and decided to combine her love for two of her favorite things, photography and babies, and founded Mommy Shots by Amrita. That's Mommy Shots by Amrita, which is her name, a high quality photography service for maternity, newborn and toddlers. She has 75,000 followers on Instagram and is someone who makes a not-so-fond-of-babies person like me go oh-so-cute with her incredible baby shots. I'm not lying when I say that her pictures on my feed lighten up my day so easily. The theme of our conversation was babies, photography, and entrepreneurship. In my chat with Amrita, we talk about her early childhood, how she was always doing 10 things, writing, dancing, theater, and lots more while growing up. How the skills of her business acumen, people handling, and approachability that she built up as an HR professional have helped her in Mommy Shots by Amrita. How she transitioned from a cushy corporate job to founding Mommy Shots by Amrita and the challenges that she faced while doing this. How and when she finally decided to take the plunge. She also discusses with us how a professional shoot gets done, the homework, the stuff that happens on shoot day and post-production. How she used photography as a medium to raise awareness about breast milk donation. This part is my favorite of the podcast. Very interesting, such an eye-opener. I urge you guys to listen to it. It's from the 21st minute in case you want to jump directly. Amrita's strong message about saying no to baby fairness creams, what a day in the life of Amrita Samant looks like, and how she just doesn't get happy. She doesn't get happy waking up in the morning, and she also doesn't get happy morning people. How Amrita plans her travel and how she picks her next destination. How she deals with creative block. Her 2 months of self-doubt where she almost shut down Mommy Shots, but with Hail Mary got back to hustling and growing it back to what it is today. To close, she shares her 2 cents for budding entrepreneurs and how anyone can and must absolutely keep their passion alive and not let it die. Whew, that's a long introduction, and in fact it's a long episode as well, but one that I had a blast doing. Without further ado, presenting to you my wide-ranging conversation with Amrita Samant. Please enjoy. By the way, everything that we discuss, Amrita's website, her Instagram handle, her travel handle, a couple of articles that are interesting on the press that covered her, all of them are in the show notes below, so feel free. Hi, Amrita. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ashwin. Really happy to be here.
Awesome. So I'm going to begin this as I begin every guest interview of mine. Tell us a little about yourself and your early childhood and how that has ended up having an influence on the person that you've become and are becoming.
All right. Well, I grew up in Chennai. All of my education was here. While growing up, I think there were very few options in terms of professions that I could pursue given out to me. Yeah. As a child, you're pretty lost, and you're looking at different adults and what they do, and you try to seek what you could identify with. So as a child, I think the most common professions I noticed were, you know, being a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer, engineer topping that list.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just followed suit with what my cousins did or what my friends, older siblings did, and I assumed this could be it. I should just get into, you know, the line of software because my sister was into it. And I followed through right up to my undergraduation. Then over time, I mean, throughout it all, while growing up, I was very involved in the arts, right from my school days, you know, be it dance, theater, anything that required being on stage, it was something I loved doing. It was those moments I'd never forget.
Yeah. Were you that kid who'd never be in class and always like doing some annual day practice or like...
That was the bonus, But being on stage always brought out this other side to me. I always felt invincible. Of course, we did have stage fright, but it was one of those things that, you know, brought out a different side to you, and it was fun. So I pursued dancing and theater quite seriously during my college years and right after college as well. However, it was really hard to figure a way to make that a profession, and it wasn't the easiest option as well back then. There wasn't so much of a foundation in the country.
So was it dance or theater?
Both actually.
Okay.
Dance would be my first love, theater right after.
Nice.
But both were very bleak in terms of a career, and even it wasn't really encouraged back home. So my next option was to pursue something I'd enjoy closest to it, and completely unlikely, I fell into HR. I stumbled into HR. All I heard about human resources was, oh, you have to be a people person. You seem like a people person. You'll be doing just that. And they were all completely wrong.
Yeah,
HR is so much more than just being a people person. And I guess any profession you get into, you've got to be a people person.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. So I went ahead and pursued a double master's in HR and then worked for about 7 years. I think what really influenced me to what I've become today from my childhood is the kind of family I grew up in. Everyone is an entrepreneur back home. I have two older siblings. They're both entrepreneurs. My parents were. And I somehow didn't identify with it, surprisingly. But now, when I look back at the last 4 years and the shift I've made in my career, I figured it was in my blood. I just had to find it. And the other influence I think I've had from my childhood to now is the arts and the media I was exposed to. I did a lot of musicals growing up. I did, like I said, a lot of dance. And I think that has really shaped me as a person. It's who I identify myself with. And it's taught me to look at the world very differently. So that's where I'm at now.
Got it. I find the shift super interesting, right? From HR to photography. What were your key learnings from your years as an HR professional that helped you here at Mommy Shots by Amrita?
I really love my job as an HR person. I may not have been the best human resources partner, but I really enjoyed every single day I went to work. A lot of people just assume it's one of those stories where, you know, you didn't like your cubicle job and so you wanted to switch. No, it was different for me. It was a cushy, safe corporate job. Taught me a lot about the business, a lot about people, and a lot about dealing with all kinds of situations. So in terms of extracting my learnings from human resources and applying it to my entrepreneurial venture of Mommy Shots by Amrita, there's a lot. When I started out, there was the challenge of changing my mindset from a corporate mindset to an entrepreneurial mindset. That was a big challenge, but over time, what helped me with my business is the kind of hospitality you've got to render as a human resources person, being approachable, that really helps in this business because you have parents who've possibly never done a shoot before and are, you know, not as clued into the whole idea of baby photography as you are, and then they come to you to learn something different and also have their child experience it. So that approachability really helps their communication skills, interpersonal skills, business acumen to a huge extent because I was an HR business partner. That did teach me a lot about the business at a higher level and how I could, you know, scale that down and change that into more transactional work on a day-to-day basis. Looking at the vision of a photography company, I mean, that's something I would never have guessed on my own until I had that kind of exposure. So also dealing with, you know, really diverse backgrounds has brought a lot of sensitivity into my day-to-day dealings with people from different cities, different languages, different cultures. I mean, there's a strong relation there. So I would say that having that HR experience has transformed my game for sure.
Yeah, and I want to stop you there for a little and ask you, when did you realize that photography was your calling, and that too with children? Like, was it one fine day that you said, you know, I'm putting my papers down, and you just take the camera and run to the beach with and click the prettiest pictures you could? Or was it like more organic and more gradual in terms of the shift?
It was a very gradual shift. When I was around, say, between the age of 20 to 25, those were my key years where I was trying to figure what I could do professionally for life.
Yeah.
And while I was pursuing my undergraduation in computer science, software was interesting, but I realized it wasn't my calling. And I dabbled in a lot of things apart from just my mainstream job in HR. I wrote for magazines.
You write as well?
I used to write.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I also decided to switch to maybe fashion consulting or becoming an image consultant. I wanted to do something very different, offer something unique here. And that really pushed my boundaries to figure out what I could do, what I could do different, and how I could be really good at it. And what that really helped me realize was I had to have those creative juices flowing somewhere. And my mainstream job didn't allow for it.
Yeah.
As much as I tried to seep it in, it wasn't the same. So I do these part-time jobs of writing for magazines, writing for the paper, dancing, theater on the side, after work hours. And, you know, over time I realized that I've been trying to sneak in time during every busy day to find a way to live that side of me.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, you know, doing something creative is what I should be doing, and I should be doing it full time, or I'm always going to have this battle of who I am. And photography really just happened to me thanks to a friend who was into wedding photography. I would do a couple of gigs with him on and off whenever I could, and that started to help me understand and look at things very differently. It helped me fall in love with photography. And the baby part, I think that's just a part of who I am. I love kids. My sister has twins. Helping her raise them was a huge, huge privilege. And I, you know, I even thought about maybe opening a nice luxury babysitting service or a creche, but a lot of these had too many logistical challenges. I think one day I finally just had a brainwave of combining photography and babies, and that's how Mommy Shots was born.
Wow.
And I decided to just quit. It took me about a good 6 months to actually.
Yeah, was it like you walking into your job and saying, not today, not today, not,
not
today,
today,
not
yeah,
today?
Something like that, yes. Like that, I was too scared. I'm a low-risk person, to be honest.
Okay.
So it took me a good 6 months to
Doesn't
finalize.
Doesn't sound like it, though, because now it's like 4.5 years of entrepreneurial, and that too, being an HR business partner and really leaving a cushy corporate job to start something of your own, and you say you're risk-averse, like, it just doesn't add up. I don't know.
Sometimes I find like I contradict myself when I say that, but it's so true. I'm not very fond of huge risks.
Yeah.
And this was the biggest risk I possibly took.
So you're done for life with the risks.
Pretty much. I told myself I'm going to give this 6 months, and worst case, it's just going to be this long sabbatical I had and go back to a corporate job. I was ready. I had like a safety net set up, and I took the risk.
Yeah.
Thankfully, my first shoot.
Was it easy? Was just the shift? So you were saying about your first shoot, but I also wanted to add, was it like, okay, this success from day one, or was it a hard fight to make this thing strong?
Actually, I mean, quite differently, success came in pretty early.
Yeah.
But the hard fight came in a little later, which freaked me out even more. I'm like, maybe I had a good 6 month run with this, but this is where the real challenge is, the sustainability.
Sure.
And, I'll come to that in a bit. Yes.
Your first shoot,
The first shoot came out really well, and with thanks to social media, there was a lot of exposure. And
how did you get your first gig?
It was a friend from school.
Okay.
Yes.
Classic.
And that worked out really well. Her baby was turning one at that point.
Nice.
She's five now.
Wow.
And we just did something really cozy and simple at home, and it worked out great. She was an amazing personality as a 1-year-old, and I just wanted to bring out that personality in my pictures, and it just worked out well.
Nice.
Yes. Thankfully, there's been no looking back since then.
So can you run us through how a shoot gets done from start to finish? We don't have to go into full details, but can you give the listeners and a few photography listeners, maybe your fans are listening to this, can you give them a top-level view of the process and its final creation? Like, what's the homework? What happens in that 1 hour if that's the period of the shoot? And what happens after in terms of post-production?
Okay, before I dive right into that, there are two ways to look at what I do. There's one when you pursue photography as an artist, where you're shooting for yourself, and then there's the other part where you're shooting for someone else, for
sure.
a client.
Sure.
You know, it's a paid service, and you're rendering your professional services then. So I'll speak about the latter here. Well, when I'm shooting for a client, I'm mostly shooting for them to make sure they get the pictures they want, provided it matches my style and approach. And so it's 80% for them and 20% for me.
Sure.
20% is for me to just experiment and try something new so I improve my skill as a photographer. So when I have someone reach out to me, my first question is to find out what type of shoot they're looking for. Is it a maternity shoot, a baby shoot? How old is the baby? And whether they're looking for something that's indoors, you know, in a cozy, homely, home type setting, or at a studio, or even outdoors at a park where a child can run about and have fun. So once I understand their requirement, I then take it forward and give them options with each thing. There are 100 ways to do a single shoot, and every child brings forward a unique personality. So it's important for me to dive into it, ask questions about the family, what they do, how they spend their weekends with their child, what does the child enjoy doing at home or outside. And once I have all of that information, I work with that and make suggestions accordingly. So we collaborate.
So all this you do on a call with the parent?
Pretty much on a call.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you charge them for a call, or is it after that, after you give your suggestions, that they say, they come back to you and then say, okay, we're on. So you listen to them anyway.
Well, the first question they all have is, you know, to find out my availability and then find out what my package and pricing is. Once we share that information with them, if they're okay with it, that's when we get on a call to discuss all of this.
Got it.
Yes. So they tell me what package they're interested in, and I try and work within their requirements completely.
Yeah.
So yes, I offer them suggestions and then go forward to plan the date, time, location, outfits, and activities based on the child's age. I also set expectations. This is really important for me. It's important to set expectations of what they can expect from this shoot. I send them reference albums so they have an idea of exactly what to expect. They share references if they have something in mind, and we take it from there. So on shoot day, I sort of guide them through it. So one huge request I get is to do a lot of outdoor shoots for one-year-olds, you know, because they've learned to walk with support. Some of them learn to walk early and they walk independently. So we try to capture the capabilities of the child in order to show what age they are at that point. And for the most part, when we're doing outdoor shoots, I usually tell them, you know what, take it easy. You know, dress with light, solid colors or whatever the guideline I give them. And I ask them to try and stay within that guideline. And I say, hey, you know what? Think of it as a picnic with your family with a photographer tagging along. So I'm not going to be a hassle over there. I just want you guys to have fun. And
I'm just going to shoot candid.
Yeah, and I'll just, you know, give you a few guidelines here and there so we get certain poses and then make sure everyone has a good experience at the end of the day. Once I'm done with the shoot, I take about 3 weeks.
And how long does this shoot last, say?
Oh, about anywhere between 1 to 3 hours max, not more. And the more I've been doing this, the shorter the time span, because I know exactly what would elicit certain reactions from a child and what would not work for a child. So that really helps me narrow down our choices and get through the shoot as soon as we can in order to not trouble the child too much.
Got it. And and about these sets, do you have these sets in mind? Do you know these places, or do you leave it up to the parents to decide for a set?
We collaborate on that, and I give them the options and I make sure they pick what they like. At the end of the day, these pictures are theirs, and I want them to be fond of these memories that we have created. So I do give them a good amount of choice in there. So post shoot, we keep in touch. I give them a 3 week delivery timeline. I usually try and deliver.
Sorry, before that, on the shoot, do you take someone with you, like how many, like an assistant or two, and lights, etc. Like, is it simple settings, or is it do you take a car, or do you like just
a
lot of things?
Well, there are two ways again to that. We do these very lifestyle, natural shoots without any props, without any lights, working with natural light outdoors. Or if they're doing something with a lot of props, then of course there's a car full of props going, or maybe sometimes two cars full of props going. We have people to set up. So I have partners who, just artists who partner with me to logistically set up everything and keep it ready. So we don't waste any time there. Because with every child, there it's really important to shoot during their routine playtime. So I make sure every child gets a good nap before we start shooting and they're well fed and they're good to go. So there's a lot of high energy they're throwing out there. And they can only they only have a threshold of about 2 hours or a max 3 hours. Keeping in mind the heat outside, keeping in mind the weather conditions, their energy levels and so on. So yes, and of course I do have photography assistants to help me as well. One is just to spot the baby and make sure we're safe at all times. The baby is safe at all times. And this, the second one is just helping me photographically with lights if needed or with reflectors and so on. So yes, it's it, like they say, it takes a village to raise a child. It pretty much takes a village to do a photo shoot as well. Because, you know, parents bring their grandparents or siblings as well along with
some
them or nannies to just help out with the dress changes, with everything. So it's quite a big party at the park or at the beach when we're doing these things. So yes, post the shoot, I start to start working on their pictures, which I'm quite paranoid about. I you know, when I complete my edits, I like to revisit them in about 2 days or again a second time after 3 days, just to see that, you know, what I've been working on looks good even a week later. Because when you constantly work on images, there's a lot of colors you're working with and you don't want to overlap them at any point while editing, because it's you're sitting for long hours in front of a system, so you need to give yourself that break.
Even I think just to draw a parallel with the creative field, writers, right, when they write, they don't hit publish immediately. They actually save it as their draft and then come back tomorrow, read it again. And for all you know, and they say that's the most important thing they do, because they cut out a lot of fluff that they didn't see the day before and then post it.
Exactly. It applies exactly as you said. Thankfully now with work getting busy, I do have an editorial team on board who just works on editing, just the basic retouches and cleanups, but none of it goes to the client without going through me, where I sit and work on the advanced edits on these images and then I send it out. So I'm still quite involved with the editing aspect, and I prefer it that way, because as a photographer, when you're shooting, you're actually thinking about how you want to edit this picture as well. And it's very hard to translate that vision to someone else and leave it at their will. Because what you're trying to shoot and what they produce in an edit would become two completely different deliverables. So, yes, I think I would call myself a little bit of a control freak on that aspect. But it helps.
But that's necessary, right?
It helps, and people
to sustain are the quality.
Happy with the pictures, and that's what's important. So, yes, it's amazing to know that these pictures will be looked at 20 years from now by these kids.
Just divulging a little from there, starting in February this year, you captured 6 striking images and launched them during the World Breastfeeding Week. That is observed in the first week of August. Tell us about it, actually. Just dumb it down, because when I read about this, I was so surprised that there are breast milk donation camps in Chennai, and that breast milk is actually can be donated to premature born babies who are probably struggling, right? So just run us through it, what it is about and how you kind of felt the passion to contribute here.
I'll talk about the latter part, the passion part. Like I told you, I love kids and I've always wanted to help kids in any way I can. So when I started out with Mommy Shots, I do a lot of these shoots for kids in an orphanage or the underprivileged kids. Just take photo shoots of them and give them prints in their hand. Their entire day is made when they have those prints in their hand. And just seeing the happiness on their faces makes it all worth it. So these were small efforts I could make wherever I tried to. And I wanted to do something bigger, something with a much bigger impact. I just didn't know what to do. I mean, thankfully, there are so many NGOs and there are so many groups working on different efforts to help kids everywhere. And I wanted to try and focus on kids who maybe need the help but didn't have it. So that's when I came across a friend who put up this post about donating breast milk. And that entire statement caught my attention. So I looked it up and I realized that breast milk donation is a thing. It's a very popular thing in the West. It's growing in India. But I think for the most part of India, and I'm saying this after talking to a whole bunch of moms who I'm friends with, who are my clients, that, you know, a large part of it is still considered a taboo. Donating your breast milk to another child is considered a taboo, or they just don't know that the concept exists. So my campaign was just about raising awareness on breast milk donation to help save NICU babies, babies in the NICU, and or premature babies.
Yeah.
Well, basically, it started with knowing that premature babies have a 75% more chance of recovery with breast milk than formula. And I know so many moms who have just thrown away packs of, you know,
sorry, when you say formula, you mean like the Tetra packs or just packeted milk? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know so many moms who have stored excess breast milk, you know, frozen for their kids, and a lot of it goes waste because there's a duration for all of this, shelf life for all of this. So having known that, and having known the fact that it can help save a baby's life, I just realized that maybe I could make a really interesting photography project out of this, using photography as a medium, just raise awareness that, hey, this concept exists and there are breast milk banks across every city now.
So are you saying that the mother whose baby was born prematurely does not have enough breast milk to offer it? That is why she reaches out? That's what I'm guessing?
Well, it could be because she cannot express milk at that point. It could be because of the state she's in, knowing her kids, you know, a preemie or in the NICU. It could be a lot of factors as to why a mom can't feed her child at that point.
Got it.
And most hospitals back then would resort to, you know, using formula to help resuscitate these children. And then the concept of breast milk donation has started to spread very quickly across India. And knowing that it exists and trying to bridge that gap of the awareness was all I really wanted to focus on. And tell moms, go ahead, there's this concept. If you're willing to, go ahead. But I launched it during the World Breastfeeding Week because it falls in the same space of, you know, breastfeeding. So that's why the launch happened during that one week.
Yeah, what was the campaign about? Like, what did it involve? Like, you said six pictures, but were they your clients? Or were they, did you reach out to them and ask them if they were comfortable? Or how was this?
Yes, yeah. I'll tell you how the campaign worked. So thankfully, I do have a decent following on Instagram, and a lot of, I think a good 80% of them are moms. So I knew that this could be the first way to spread word about this campaign or about raising awareness here. And I did have a lot of moms who participate in it also reshare it, as well as a whole, surprisingly, a whole bunch of moms who have been through this phase of having their kids in the NICU, having to find moms who can donate breast milk, encouraged me, supported me, and reshared this on their own with everyone else in their circles. Wow. So the campaign did reach a good amount of people across India, and I tried to also spread word in other cities. So this is an ongoing project. It's going to be a year long worth of effort. The next series of images will be launched in about 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Which will be another bunch of five images talking about it from with moms from different cities. You know, supporting the cause, talking about it, and I've tried to bring a few influencers on board as well.
Nice.
My ties with the milk banks is just to verify, validate that these milk banks are legit. They currently are operational, functional, safe. And my job is to just make sure that moms know about this and just lead them to these milk banks.
Sure.
Another way is to actually come to my website, fill up the donor form, and I share these forms with the milk banks in those respective cities that I've already been in touch with. So I'm just trying to bridge that gap over there that exists right now, because there aren't any huge campaigns or huge promotions done by the milk banks directly. People learn about it through their doctors at the hospitals where they deliver, or through their pediatricians, which is a very small source right now. So the milk bank that I first supported in Chennai had a 30% increase in the first month.
Wow.
In the donations. So it became, I mean, it was quantifiable, which made me feel like, okay, this has really helped someone somewhere, and that's a good thing. I told myself, if this helps even one baby,
that must be so gratifying.
Yes, I would consider the job done.
Yeah.
But it has helped much more than one baby, and that's amazing. So when you keep it going, keep the momentum going, and make sure I involve moms from different backgrounds across the country and spread word here.
That is so noble of you. And when you say, so you say seven donation spots exist in Chennai. Like, where are they? Like, the first one, for example, where do they exist? Are they in the heart of the city, or are they spread across?
I'll be honest, I actually located two that I was in touch with.
Yeah.
And then there were a lot of press articles that came out in the city about this.
Yeah.
And they did more research and found another five more.
Wow.
Which made it better, because the reach was wider through the newspapers, and the list was mentioned in the paper. So it made it a lot easier.
Yeah.
But there's Vijaya Milk Bank.
Okay.
And there's also Child Trust Hospital.
Oh, nice.
These are the first two that I had located.
Got it. Awesome. So if you could put something on a banner for the world to see, what would it be? For example, Jim Rohn says that you are the average of the five people you spend most time with. Usain Bolt says that the world does not owe you a thing. What would yours be?
I think it would be say no to baby fairness creams. Something that irks me to another level altogether. When I first came across someone talking about a child fairness cream, I was so mad. It's one thing that, you know, as adults, we have huge personalities endorsing fairness creams. And it's another thing to have a fairness cream for a child. Imagine the kind of pressure you want to put on your child who's just born a certain color. So that's one thing I would put big, bold fonts. Moms use baby fairness creams on their children, hoping that they become fairer as they grow up. Absolutely ridiculous. This crosses the line for me. Even in my contract that I send out to clients who are going to work with me, I clearly state that I will not post-process to make anyone look fairer than they actually are. Brightness is one thing, but fairness is a totally different ballgame, and that's not something I would endorse. That's the first thing I would put on the back.
Okay, so run us through what a day in the life of Amrita Samant looks like. Samant, am I getting it right?
That's right.
Just tell us how your day or the week goes, right? Like, how do you have a plan before? Obviously, you have a plan, but how finicky are you about shifting things around? And what comprises the chunk of your day? And what do you leave for things like these, like a podcast or like outreach or just general stuff?
There's no way for me to schedule my day without leaving a space for flexibility or fluidity of changes, because I work in the space of children. There's a day when I have three shoots lined up, and I have to be open to the fact that three may spill over time because we're working with kids and we have to keep flexibility open. And there's also the chance of someone calling me an hour before shoot and saying my baby just threw up and I don't think she's doing well, so I don't think I'll come. And I'm like, we don't want to trouble the child any further. It's very hard to have a schedule in my life. It's really hard to keep to time with all of these changes that keep happening. But as much as possible, I've tried to maintain some sort of routine, at least at the beginning of my day and at the end of my day, so that I have some structure in my life. So my days don't start early. I'm just not a morning person. I'm way more functional, way more efficient during the peak hours of the day. Yeah, but definitely not the morning. So I start my day by about 7 a.m. and I can't function without tea or coffee. So I give myself that time to just wake up, and I'm a much nicer person after that.
Most of us are,
right? And these happy morning people, I don't get them. Really? I just don't.
I mean, my friends would call me one, but I'm a morning person for a few months in the year, and then this is the time of the year that I'm not a morning person. So I tried like 6 months, and then I'm burnt out, and I'm like, okay, did 5 a.m. days for like 300 days, 150 days straight. No, I'm just gonna take it easy.
I admire that skill from a distance. Right after that, I dive right into work. The last 4 years that I've started my own venture with photography, I have been diving into my work so much that I have literally made no time for anything else. So my day starts early, starts with work. I check emails, respond to messages. WhatsApp is a huge part of my life right now because it's the easiest mode of communication with everyone. And I start to plan my day. I plan my day at least to the extent of knowing when I'm going to check into my studio, when I'm going to check out, and what I could do after that. So I typically come into the studio by about 9:30, 10, and I'm out of here by about 6 in the evening, post which I actually have some time to breathe. That's when I make plans to, spend time with family or go out and meet friends, hit the gym. And of course, my nights are where I reserve for editing because there's a lot of silence around. I just work better at night. And I sometimes work into the wee hours of the morning, or right now I'm trying to schedule it and shut everything by 12 a.m. max. Which is quite late in itself, yes. But I get a lot of work done during those hours. So that has been working for me. And this is pretty much my routine even when I'm on vacation. I spend the first couple of hours at work and then the rest of the day exploring. And at night, if I have the energy, I would edit
it. And how do your friends deal with it? The fact that your schedule is so, not yours completely.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you kind of maintain that balance between your social life?
And,
yeah,
they hate me. They don't want to be my friends.
Yeah.
They tell me, they say like, we are your friend. You're not our friend. Because I have not been balancing my time very well. So I'm not the best example for this. But I'm trying to bring that change about this year.
Sure.
And the next couple of months are just going to be about me, my relationships with people,
yeah,
and my health. That's what I want to focus on at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess expressing that intent that you want to make it work or want to make that effort in itself is like good enough. But there's a lot of workaholics who just like, okay, fine, like screw you, like you don't want to talk to me, fine, I'm busy, yeah. But on the other hand, there are people who say, you know what, I'm going to work this out, now give me some time, I'm going to take the effort to balance things out, which is something credit
yeah.
enough, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the hustle is one excitement or like an adrenaline rush by itself,
yeah.
But it's high time I give myself time. I can afford to be complacent right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I see you travel a lot. You have a personal Instagram account. I will tag that in the show notes below for you guys to check out. There's some spectacular travel pictures there. How do you manage with this crazy schedule, balancing with friends, family, and what does travel mean to you?
So my work itself takes up a lot of time with traveling. I am set up in Chennai and Bangalore as well as Singapore. Chennai and Bangalore was every month. And
Singapore? How come? Like, why Singapore?
There was a demand, there was a need for it, and it just made sense to do it in Singapore as well. And so I visit Singapore once in 3 months, and I line up all my shoots, visit for a week, complete them, come back.
Are you doing one soon, or did you just do one?
I just did one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I'll be going again in Jan. So it's also like a nice release because the locations there are really different, the people are different. It just brings about a different, it inspires you in many ways,
yeah,
and opens up a lot of creative blocks there. So Singapore is actually quite a good release for me, and India itself has a lot of places that I visit for work. So
yeah,
there's all the tier 2 cities like Madurai, Coimbatore and so on, and then there are places like Bombay and Delhi and Hyderabad that I frequent,
yeah,
quite a lot. So on an average I spend about a week to 10 days in Chennai or 15 days in Chennai, and the remaining time is across these cities.
Got it.
So that schedule itself is quite hectic,
yeah,
and I usually don't get any days off in a month. But when I do want to reserve my time off, it's only on vacation for myself.
Yeah.
So it's with this sort of schedule and with the kind of profession I'm in order to avoid reaching a point where I'm so blocked and so burnt out, I just keep taking frequent breaks.
So do you plan them well in advance, or is it just...
I have to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In my line of work, everybody blocks shoots with me a month or two in advance. So I have to plan my holidays
yeah,
away
so
in advance.
So that your schedule is not others.
Yes.
It's yours.
So I've been doing a trip a month this year.
Oh, nice.
For myself.
That's awesome.
And then the rest of the days are scattered all over the place.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's really important for me to get that time off, or I would have been burnt out a long time ago.
Yeah. So are these travel moments like more like very introspective and helps you rejuvenate and come back and do better at work? Or is it more like, oh, I just need a break and release and like... get drunk out of my minds and then come back to work?
It's the form of mostly, because
yeah,
on a regular day at work I'm just moving from task to task, but with these with this time off I get to stop, think about how I could make my overall job better, make my overall company vision better, what I could do. It helps me sort of realize what I could have done better in terms of shooting, in terms of the business angle of it, the business development part of it. And I come back a fresher and happier person. So it's mostly introspective. And these are also trips. Even though I go to beautiful places, I do not carry my camera too.
Really?
I just use
then
my
how
iPhone.
How do you get those shots?
The iPhone. Most of them are the iPhone, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the iPhone's great if you know how to use it, they say. Just like
any
shots.
Camera.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But do you have like any specific places that you'd like to go to, or the kinds of places that you like to pick for your travel? Or is it more like, oh, my friend wants to go here, so we go there? How do you pick your travel places, your budgeting, and just generally the whole planning, right?
Okay. All right. So I'm not a planner.
Okay.
It's about finding. It's a good question you're asking me, because I just try to go to the next place I haven't been to.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, you know, in Southeast Asia, I still have South Korea left, Japan left, Borneo.
So you're a planner.
No, I mean,
you know the countries that are left. Like, I don't even know.
I've covered quite a bit in Southeast
yeah.
Asia, but I just try and take it off based on, you know, good time to visit. And I plan. I'm like, okay, I've seen a lot of people go here, so maybe I should go check it out too.
Yeah.
I follow a lot of travel accounts. I watch a lot of travel vlogs when I'm free. And that gives me an idea of, okay, this is very interesting. And every time you visit a new country, you want something different. I'm always seeking different food, different cultures, different landscapes.
Yeah, and you're big on food.
Big on food, yeah.
So food might just be like a filter.
Yes,
yeah.
A filter, absolutely. I wouldn't call myself a foodie, but I'm definitely a big food lover.
Yeah.
And I think all we Sindhis are, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's in our blood. Anyway, so I think it's these travel blogs and travel accounts that inspire me. If I see a pretty place, I definitely want to go there.
Got it. You are very much in the creative field. And how do you deal with creative blocks? Writer's block, photo. I don't know if there's a block that you call a photographer's block. That is, I'm done shooting everything that I could. Now there's nothing more left. Is there something like that? Or on some days, do you feel like my creative juices are just leaving me? I can't seem to gather enough courage to just have everything together. And yeah, how do you deal with them?
You've really put a lot of thought into your questions.
Yeah, I thought creativity is one main component of your job, right? And you need that. Like it's not something you can buy off the shop. It's not tangible. It's intangible, and you need to renew it day after day. So how do you do that?
I go through creative blocks all the time.
Yeah.
The first time I went through it, I was obsessing about it, and I never got out of it. I think the biggest trick here is to not obsess about it, and continuously look for sources of inspiration. You just never know what it is. For me, travel is one way to get inspired. The other daily routine inspiration I get is through the kids I meet. You never even think about it, but when you're shooting, the child comes up to you and does something different and gives you something completely off that you've always been doing. So they inspire me in many, many ways. It's always a surprise with them.
Yeah.
But the blocks part of it, I think what really helped me is to obsess less about it.
Yeah.
And constantly seek or find new ways to get past it. I mean, if there was a better solution, I'd love to hear it myself. Those are difficult days where you're going through a dry spell and you're like, I don't know how to do this better. I just want to do it. There have been months I've gone through doing things on autopilot and until something strikes me. But my search or my perseverance to seek it never ends. And that's by leaving no stone unturned. It could be movies, it could be...
Movies are accessible, yeah. Affordable ways of inspiration.
Yes,
yeah.
And attending a lot of photography exhibitions. Yes, museums, photography museums are another huge source of inspiration because you get to see work done by photographers in the 1950s, the 1960s, and you're like, wow, I would never even think of that frame. And, maybe I could try that out with a child. Why not?
Sure.
And you don't want to copy a picture, but you want to get inspired by it and see if that changes your style. So, yeah, that's... Nice. Not the best answer, but...
No. I mean, I had... It's very similar to another guest I had on my show, the authorized biographer of A.R. Rahman. So, he has written two books, and he's, I think, 23 years of age. And when I asked him how he deals with writer's block, and does he even get it, because he's just so early in the business, he's like, writer's block hits you on the second day that you start writing, right? And how he deals... He says, the only way you deal with writer's block is to continue writing.
Mm-hmm.
And not run away from it. It's to show up every single day and continue doing your work. And then every now and then you'll have these bursts, and you need to just identify when you're in the zone and capitalize on it. Because work is not uniform. Like, your peaks are not uniform. It's always peaks and troughs. And just your ability to identify in your awareness of your own self that, yes, this is the zone. I need to leave everything and go do my work and go ship at that very time. And that kind of helps in terms of just dealing with the blocks.
Couldn't agree more, and that's a fabulous answer.
Yeah.
Way better. I mean, that's helpful, actually.
Yeah.
And I think just to add to that is also being fresh when you come to work every day. Like, making sure you're well-rested.
Sure.
Maybe working out. Just something to clear your mind every single day. At some point, you'll break through it. Just to add to his answer. Yeah. But that's a fabulous...
Krishna, credits to him if he's listening to this. So with this success that you've had for four and a half years, 70,000 plus followers on Instagram, were there any moments of self-doubt where you said, you know what, this is not working? You said you had a good success in the beginning, but then there was this moment of struggle. Can you run us through how you dealt with that, what happened, and how you maneuvered through?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't be honest as an entrepreneur if I kept telling you I was really successful from the beginning up until now. I did have a period in between, which was when I fell flat on my face with this business, and I'm like, this is not for me. What really happened is...
And how far in were you with Mommy Shots by Amrita at this point? Like, was it a year in? Was it 2 years in? Or?
I was actually 6 months in. The first couple of months was amazing. It was a typical hockey stick growth. I had like a surge of requests to do photo shoots, which made me, of course, more confident about what I'm doing and what I'm offering. And I was riding that wave very happily until 6 months in, there was a complete flat period where I had nobody asking me for shoots. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't think this is sustainable. I'm being unrealistic with myself. I should just go back to being an HR person in a corporate job. So keeping that in mind, I tried really hard those 2 months to try and secure at least a few shoots, but I managed to get maybe five those 2 months. A scary and lull period I had. And when I finally gave up on it, I decided to reach out to folks I knew in the industry to tell them, hey, you know what? I'm done with this. I need to go back and get serious with my profession. And I did. I reached out to people who trusted me a lot. And I applied with a few companies, got two offers in hand, two amazing offers, I might add. Accept the offer, and I joined the company. And what happened is, during my entire interview process, which was for about a good 2 months, business came back to being on its feet on its own. I had a surge of requests, people asking for photo shoots.
So wait, you didn't wrap this down. You didn't say I'm off the hook. You continually let that be, and you started with the job.
Yes, I let it be. I just didn't make any effort to help it grow, but the request started to pour in on their own. I guess the 2 months where I did not have any shoots, I spent that time constructively to do experimental shoots of my own. And I decided to just put that work out there, and that really helped regain a lot of requests from families. So I accepted this offer, and then I finally turned it down last minute, which was very unprofessional. I would agree, but I mean, I was there, and it's important for me to share the story, because I had lost faith in myself. I'd lost faith in what I was doing. But when this entire incident happened, I did burn a lot of bridges here. I said no to the corporate company finally, and I went back to Mommy Shots because I saw that there was potential. I just did not wait it out. So I guess as an entrepreneur in your journey, you've got to really ride the ups and the downs all together with a good amount of patience and perseverance, and you'll definitely make it through if you stick with it. And I told myself that I would never do this again, and I would make Mommy Shots work no matter what, but I would not have this imbalance of my decisions here again.
Sure.
And that was a turning point in my life.
But you said in those 2 months of seeing things not working, you were still working on the site, creating portraits and creating your work. How did you have that stamina? Because if I'm crippled with self-doubt, or if I'm just like, okay, things are not going well, I wouldn't find the courage in me or the strength in me to kind of put work out there still. Like, how did you manage that?
I had to push myself, because it had to work one way or the other. I mean, we have bills to pay. It's a profession that I made an investment in, and photography as a profession is an expensive profession. And I think more importantly, I started to shoot for myself as an artist. And that's something I do even today. It doesn't have to be for anyone. It would be to satiate my artistic appetite. And that's what I did during that time. And it really helped me see things differently. And the work that I brought out is still spoken about today by a few clients. People have pointed
out. In
those
2 months?
Yes, in those 2 months.
And that's helping you win business even till today?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
I guess, you know, having some downtime and shooting for yourself or doing things for yourself is also important to enjoy the journey.
Sure. Just with this, right? What advice would you give to somebody who is not ready to take the plunge? Someone who is having that cushy or not cushy corporate job, or just something to pay the bills, but still wants to pursue passion on the side? Like, they can't completely take that leap of faith. What advice would you have for them?
Well, I would tell them to believe in themselves and have faith in themselves to start with, in the idea they want to pursue. You know, I was told that, you know, chances like this or taking the plunge was for elitists, people who had good financial security and had backup plans or big safety nets to secure them in case it went wrong. But I mean, I defeated that. I did not have any of those options, but I still tried to find a way to make it work. And that was all based, it's all based on your perseverance and your interest. If you're interested, you will do a job well. If you're not interested, you're not going to bother too much about it. So gauge and answer those questions to yourself first, honestly, and then take the plunge. Believe in it. It'll work.
Yeah. I mean, calculated plunge. It's not just like dive in and figure it out.
Of course. It really depends on what you're trying to take the plunge in. Also, make sure you, I mean, you have to do a good business read on what you're offering. Should be different, should be needed. Is it a necessity? Is it luxury? And then take that plunge. Because if you are switching careers, that's a huge step by itself. So when I started out, there was nobody else doing baby photography in the market, which gave me a first mover's advantage.
Sure.
And I knew that. And that's
how I went
into
that conference. Are there too many people who are doing it? Are there many people who are doing it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah?
Definitely. Now there are plenty. And I think it's great that there are plenty because we have a very healthy community.
It's the best out of yourself, like a good competition.
It's never about competition here. It's about having people approach you because they like your work and your style. It's nothing else. I mean, we pass on work to each other all the time as a community. So
that's awesome.
Yes.
You don't find that too often these days.
You don't.
Yes. So what's the best way to reach you, Amrita, if people want to contact you for a shoot? Like, don't reach you.
I'm kidding.
You're too busy. Your calendar's too packed. Okay, what if I want to contact you for a shoot in 2020? Like, how do I reach you? Like,
that's good planning. There are so many mediums to reach me.
Yeah, but I think you're most popular and most best reached at on Instagram.
Instagram is the biggest source, I would say, currently. It's my biggest source of leads. But the way a person can reach me is through my website, email, always responded to. We never leave an email unattended.
Awesome.
Instagram DMs are a little hard to keep up with, but we mostly do. And WhatsApp.
And most Instagram DMs are just about appreciating your work, while emails will be more business queries. So that's a good way to kind of...
Yeah, no, we actually get a mix of both on Instagram DMs. So it gets a little hard to filter. But thankfully, there are better facilities to flag such messages now going forward. But it can get a little messy there. I always suggest email as the best mode to call me
good
or to contact
email.
Me. And phone calls are also hard to keep up with because I'm in shoots all day. So I do have a team. I have a business manager who handles all of this at the back end and makes, she's like the face of mommy shots for when I'm not available.
Got it.
So that makes me a lot more approachable because there are two people here to reach out to. So yes.
Awesome. So email and your website is the best way to reach you.
Yes.
Awesome. This was so fun to do, Amrita. Thank you so much. And I definitely enjoyed doing this. I hope you had a good time.
I had a great time. In fact, like a lot of your questions got me thinking about things I've never, you know, spoken up about before or thought about before, because life sort of, you know, just reels you over, just happens.
Yeah.
Yes, and you don't get time to sit and think.
Yeah.
These questions were interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.